Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. We're broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stacy Okowski.
And our theme today is Visioning Valentine's Day. I don't know what that means, but that is our theme today. And we have some stories for you. Today is Monday, February 7th, and we're glad you're with us. Stash, how was your weekend?
The weekend was magnificent. Now, let me see. I wonder why. Anyway, it was pleasant. We got a lot of things. We had a nice fire in the fireplace.
Oh.
And yeah, so... yeah, we had a very pleasant weekend. And it's supposed to be nicer weather this coming week, so I hope it is.
Me too.
Yes.
Okay.
And let's see. What's coming up?
Speak
Story Series, yes. And on February 8th, Tuesday at 7:30, we have Wendy Folsom, who is a marvelous storyteller, just graduated from East Tennessee State University with a master's degree in storytelling and I forget what the other part of it is. Anyway, she just got a master's degree. She's not a young person, not a kid. She's been telling stories for more than 20 years. And she just recently got married. And see, the story she's going to be telling tomorrow is about a mother's love. And it is a difficult story. I've heard some of it and I know her pretty well. So I'm looking forward to it. And I think our audiences will really like her performance.
Not to be missed.
No. And then coming up, we have in March, this is one of those unusual things, because February 8th, there's a performance, and then March 8th, because of the way February has the dates, you know, only 28 days, so it's a repeat.
The magic of the calendar.
Yes. And coming up then is Mara Menzies, M-A-R-A, her first name. And she is, she has a background, a dual rich cultural background, Kenyan and Scottish cultural heritage. And she creates worlds that explore contemporary issues through legend, myth, and fantasy. I'm really looking forward to that. And then in April, if everything goes well, and it should, there is no reason to suspect that anything will not, there will be a special speak will be doing this beginning, presenting speak twice each month on second Tuesday and then the next day, Wednesday, April 12th. At 7:30 p.m. and April 13th at 7:30 p.m. And these programs will be online. And if possible, one of them will be in person in Shepherdstown. We're still working on the in-person thing. And there will be two separate programs. Sheila Arnold is going to be doing a program on Tuesday, April 12th at 7:30, and then again on Wednesday, April 13th. And The programs will be different. Tuesday's program will be Oni Judge, 18th century free woman, past personal maid servant to Martha Washington. Wednesday's program will be Running into Dunbar, about Paul Laurence Dunbar, short story author, composer, and scholar. And so those two programs by Sheila Arnold will be exceptional. And the rest of the Speak Story series will go along as we're telling each week. We'll add a couple of them because it takes a long time to go through all the months. So, are you looking forward to next Monday, Valentine's Day?
I am. Valentine's Day is a pretty big deal in my family. Good. So I am looking forward to that. And I have a little bit of a rambling story to tell.
Okay.
And I wanted to just recap that I told a story about my parents on Saturday at the Griot Circle of Maryland and their dining room that was curated, preserved at the Philadelphia right. Folklore Project, by the Philadelphia Folklore Project. And we had about 40 people on that part of the Zoom session. And I know you were there and you met some Ooh. People you hadn't seen in a while, mm-hmm. or any person you hadn't seen in a while. And
oh, yeah.
my brother and his family were there, and some of my cousins were there. And it was a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, it was nice for me to see Karen Bridenholm. She and I worked together back in the 90s at a private school in Baltimore. And we did some storytelling together at that school for the children. And she helped out with a number of things I did. One of the things that was exciting for me to do with her and with one of the ladies who worked down in one of the offices at the school, who played music for us at the piano, and Karen read one of my stories, a long story that I wrote. And my drama club kids were all in animal costumes that they created. Oh, and the story that Karen read was a legend that I had written about a young girl who was chosen to go and find the god who would help them, because her village and the people around her were having a difficult time with food and supplies. At the same time, in this legend, there was an elderly man far, a fair distance away, who was sent by his people to look for the god who would help his people, because they had a similar problem with food and with necessary items. Anyway, it's a very long story. It's not something that I would tell in a regular performance, but I have performed it on stage a couple of other times with similar things going on. People in masks and some animal costumes acting out what the teller is saying. So, and Karen did a beautiful job on that. So it was wonderful. Anyway, that's it. So, okay, and I'm excited about, well, let's see, Valentine's Day. I don't know, maybe because I'm getting older or something, we don't do too much on Valentine's Day. I like to think of it this way. Terry and I are so loving to each other every single day that every day is special. And we don't have to do anything super special on certain date to show our love, which is kind of a blessing, because I don't love that. I do, you know. I've told people this, and people don't believe it, but it doesn't matter because it is true. Terry and I never fight. We might disagree on something, but we don't shout at each other. We don't get angry. We don't get mad. We don't stop talking to each other. Anything like that. And I hear that about other couples. We've been together for 26 years, and I can't imagine ever raising my voice to Terry and yelling or, you know, something like that. But I know that that has happened to some people, and in deep, distant past in my life, I believe I did have discussions that weren't so pleasant with members of the opposite sex. So anyway, but that won't happen here on Monday. And,
okay then, all righty. I will look forward to not having that.
And my
your resolution. Well, I do want to thank Andy Offit Irwin for opening our show with Terry Here, his original composition. And Andy just posted something new on Facebook, but I haven't gotten around to looking at it yet, so I don't know what it is. I did say there was something there that I have to make a note to make sure I look.
Okay, that sounds well. It sounds like you. I'll try to check on that also.
So I'm going to tell just a little bit of a rambling Valentine's Day ramble. I don't know that there's a better name than that. I like that you talked about being settled and comfortable in your domestic relations, that Valentine's Day no longer seems like a big deal. And what was running through my head when you were saying that is that for me, Valentine's Day has never been only about the romantic side of Valentine's Day. I think actually what is possibly more important to me, I'm not sure about that. Not sure I'm going to go on the record saying that. But one of the things I love about Valentine's Day is that the community as a whole is smiling and celebrating and thinking of interesting things to do for each other. And it's not, for me, it's not about spending the money. I'm really not so much into expensive cards or anything like that. Big boxes of chocolate. Although that was a thing in my childhood. But I like being able to celebrate with people that are far away by mailing things or doing phone calls, things like that. And I guess right now, you know, February is Heart Health Month. So that's part of my focus at the moment. And as a woman over 70, I am now officially catapulted into the world of annual checkups and medical exams and testing. So Jose and I are regularly making the rounds of two or three medical practitioners every month. And so Valentine's Day, I will be paying attention to what I eat. I'll be paying attention to how much sleep I'm getting and trying to make sure I'm taking care of myself and in general, kind of my mental health. And given the weather history for the month of February, most years, Valentine's Day has become largely about my mental health. That's the time of the month for me to take a deep breath and look beyond the 6-degree temperatures that we had most of January and the beginning of February, and the snow and the ice and the gray skies, and think about what might bring sunshine into my heart and the hearts around me. And my very favorite part of Valentine's Day for a long time, since I've been a grown-up, is sending and receiving cards. And since I never completely finished sending out Christmas and New Year cards by February, those pink and red and purple hearts are just another opportunity for me to communicate with faraway friends and family. Sometimes I make a few special homemade crafty cards to insert a little wow factor, and I send those to people I feel I've neglected recently or who are ill or bereft, family members grieving a loss or just having a hard time in the moment, friends who are suffering for various reasons. I can't eat chocolate myself anymore, but flowers are still important to me. And Jose often buys some red and white carnations like my dad used to bring home for my mom when I was a kid. He would also bring home an enormous box of Whitman's chocolate that she would share with us kids. So that's memorable for me. Sometimes I can get my daughter to go with me to the dollar store for cards. And that's fun, picking out cards and figuring out who we're going to send what. 2 years ago, Rachel helped me make quilted hearts that we sent to Jose's mom and a couple other people we wanted to connect with. We lost Jose's mom soon after her birthday, spring of 2021. And we lost several other elders this past year. Arthuretta Martin, who was an astonishing storyteller and vocalist and all-around powerful woman, lost her to complications from COVID. And my good friend Marie Stover, also from COVID. So I've been lighting candles in their memory to honor their lives. And I want to do that again on Valentine's Day. I think this year I'm also going to research Saint Valentine and prepare a bit of a story about him that I can use forward. Maybe also find out if there are other anniversaries in February that I want to take note of. My dad always celebrated Frederick Douglass's birthday, February 14th, bringing home a children's book for Doug, or my brother, or for me. And I've been reading Frederick Douglass's collected works, and so I'm hoping to read a few pages most days in February. That really makes me feel better educated and like I'm paying attention to what matters in the world. I may look for some children's books on Frederick Douglass and send those to my cousin's grandkids, because that was actually a special request right from the source. And I recently found there's an inventor, a woman named Margaret E. Knight, who was born February 14th, 1838, in York, Maine. She was known as the female Thomas Edison. And since she died in 1914, she was around through one of those great periods of technology innovation in the US. And I think that would be a fun story to tell. And then there's Richard Allen, born February 14th, 1831, the first African-American ordained in the American Methodist Episcopal Church, the AME Church. And he was a Philadelphian. So I know a few little anecdotes about him and want to read more. I will probably be stretching Valentine's Day, I guess, to fit in a lot of things that seem relevant to the day. I might get Rachel to go to the dollar store with me for Valentine's, and I might bake some little mug cakes to give away, little carrot cakes, or my favorites, applesauce beet cakes, which I've been making for a while that I really like. I might make a few chocolate mug cakes for some people. I might sew a couple quilted cloth hearts with my daughter and light some candles for Marie Stover and Arthuretta Martin and my old mentor, Joe Heron. I'll probably talk to a couple people about diabetes education, because there are several of us who have been recently tested pre-diabetic, and we need to do something about that. And then sending out maybe 20 Valentine cards also, because celebrating with the people that we love is kind of the point for me. So that's my vision of my Valentine's Day.
Next wow. Month. So I have a question for you. This is a serious question. What's the lady's name you mentioned? I won't say the man's name you mentioned, but the lady's name.
Okay. Margaret E. Knight. K-N-I-G-H-T. Born February 14th, 1838 in Maine, York, Maine, and died 1914.
Okay. Because I just want to do research on her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can have a competition.
Pardon?
We can have a competition. Who can find out the most information?
Oh, okay. Well, if you want.
Mind.
If you want, we could do that. Okay, so let's see. You're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour. And this is Stasia Olkowski and
Fanny Crawford,
your host for the radio hour. And you can go back for about almost 4 years to talltales.enlightenradio.org. And we have podcasts of our Monday shows. And it's unbelievable how many shows you and I have done. And no one has stormed John's office or his base for where he broadcasts from to demand that we be pulled off the air or to demand that we be given prizes. So we're
so
doing okay.
So far as we know.
Well, yeah, they haven't found out where he is, where his base of operations is. Anyway, we've had lots of fun doing this. And I'm going to tell a kind of short story about a Valentine's Day. I don't think it's an adventure. I'm not sure. You might have a good description for it when I'm finished. Okay. Because this has to do with a time in my life when I was really excited about Valentine's Day. And it was because there was a girl by the name of Mary Ann. Two words, Mary and Ann. And she and I were in school together in elementary school from kindergarten all the way through eighth grade. And sometime starting about maybe, I don't know, fifth grade or so, I think that might be the first time I thought of the girls, it's especially in my class, as being other than just them. That's not a very nice way to think of a group of people, but until I was about 10 or 11, I guess, girls were just boys that happened to be misfortunate and had to wear dresses and stuff like that, and were punished by somebody, maybe the Almighty, and were going to have to raise families and cook and clean and stuff like that. Because in my little 10-year-old mind at that time, I didn't know, and neither did most of the rest of the people at least in my environment, know that there were going to be days like we have now, where many couples are absolutely equal, where some husbands stay home and raise the children and cook the meals, and the wife goes out and earns all the money or things like that. And anyway, so I began to notice that Mary Ann was a very nice girl, and she was friendly. And sometimes we would talk to each other. And none of the, I don't think we ever had a conversation that was more than maybe, you know, three sentences each. And my memory of it is that each time I spoke with her, sometimes when we were on the playground, and there were conversations had to be crazy. I wish I had a recording of some of them, because I never really stood still and talked to her. It was usually passing by. And I still had in my mind that I didn't want the boys on the playground to notice me hanging around with one of the girls, because that wasn't what we did then. At least I didn't think we did. Well, as time went on, I started to notice things like when we were in sixth grade, that people would write notes to each other. Mostly it was the girls writing notes to the girls about stuff. And I found out from some of my friends that one of the things that the girls wrote notes about were they wrote about the boys. And as I got older, I found out that they wrote about the boys, and they weren't. Some of the stuff they wrote was, did you know that Mike is cute and he lives over there? And I saw him with his mother downtown and she said hello. And they were very nice, all this stuff. But, you know, the boys weren't writing notes like that. As time went on, I noticed that I saw a couple of boys put a note on the girl's desk. It was over a period of time. Anyway, it started to dawn on me that if I wanted Mary Ann to be a special friend, I should find a way to do something special, something nice. And so I went to the well of information about everything in my young life. And you can probably guess what
that Tony. Well.
Yes, Tony is the well, because Tony knew everything. You know, Tony was cool. Tony was, you know, one of the guys 3 years older than myself. And he wore cool clothes and stuff. I don't know why his clothes seemed to be so much more cool than mine. Part of it was that as soon as Tony started doing stuff like a paper route and things like that, he could use his money. If he saved his money, he could buy his own, you know, he could buy a shirt or something that he wanted. I remember he bought a pair of pants. I don't even forget what year it was, but they were so wild. They were dark green and white stitching down the sides on the outside. And I can't even imagine. I don't remember the year, but I do remember I really wanted a pair of pants like that so I could look cool like my brother. And I didn't have them. Anyway, I asked Tony about I didn't mention Mary Ann because I didn't want him to know, you know, details. And I just kind of was generalizing. And ask him, you know, if I wanted to do something nice for one of my classmates, and she happened to be a girl, like, what could I do? And Valentine's Day was coming up, and he said, well, you could give her a card, but everybody does that. He said, maybe you could give her a little present. You could find something that's, you know, nice, and wrap it up and put it on her desk. So that became my plan. Over the next couple of weeks, building up to Valentine's Day, I took some, we call them pop bottles, soda bottles, to the store and turned them in for money.
Royal Crown Cola bottles could be turned in for money and some other bottles. And it was interesting back then, there were people back in, this is in the 50s, people who actually made, not made a lot of money, but could collect a lot of bottles. And if they worked at it, they could get a fair amount of change for it. My sister's husband, Ray, never passed a bottle, never. If he was driving down the street or even on the road and he saw a bottle on the side of the road, he would pull over, he would pick it up. As long as it wasn't broken or chipped, he would put it in his trunk. And then when he got home, he would, you know, he'd get a collect those, clean them up. And after a while, he would go to one of the stores that would take the bottle and give him, and he got as much as a nickel for some of those bottles. And so he actually inspired me over a period of time in my life, and I still do it. I don't drive off the road and park on a, you know, side and pick up things like I used to. But I used to stop and pick up stuff. I have found wrenches and hammers and all kind of other things, even on the highway around Baltimore. I remember stopping and I found an entire set of wrenches and a collection of tools that somebody had dropped off of a truck or a car or something. And it took me about 15 minutes. I didn't have to dodge traffic, but I had to be careful because this was on 695, which is a very busy road. And it was on a Sunday, and I was, of course, I was older. I wasn't in 10th, I wasn't 10 years old anymore in this little thing I'm talking about. But anyway, I collected all these neat tools, and I picked that up from Ray and collecting for a while. So over a period of a few weeks, I was able to collect some money. And I kept wondering, what could I do? What could I buy? You know, I didn't know what to do about writing a card. Sometimes in my life, I fancy myself as a person who can write poetic things or nice phrases. But this day was coming up, and I didn't want to take a chance on a card. I did walk by a store and on Broadway, not too far from where I lived, a block, and I saw in the storefront, there were a number of things displayed, and one of them was a wallet. And actually, it had more than one wallet. They had a number of wallets, and it was, there were some wallets there that were obviously for men, and there were some that were obviously for women. And even I could tell the difference. I'm trying to remember the exact amount. I believe that wallet cost $1.79. And when I say that, I think that doesn't sound like very much. But back in the 50s, you know, you could buy a whole lot of stuff for $1.79. You know, if I had that much money in my pocket and I was on my own, like for the whole day, I could get myself pretty juiced up on sodas and ice cream and potato chips and stuff for that much money. Anyway, so I had enough money for it. On the spur of the moment, I went in, I bought the thing. Well, then I decided I should wrap it up. And I found some paper in the house. I didn't ask anybody. I snooped around when no one was paying attention and found some paper. It didn't have hearts on it or anything like that, but it was nice. And I thought it would be okay. And I wrapped it. And so I had that wallet for about at least a week, maybe 10 days before Valentine's Day. And I actually took it with me to school and I put it in my desk. You know, we have this desk, you lift up the top of the desk that you wrote on and I could put it in, all the way in the back. And on Valentine's Day, I was going to try to get into the classroom a little bit early, take the wallet out, it was wrapped, and put it on Marianne's desk. And it didn't even dawn on me that I had written just a short note, but I didn't sign my name. And so I did. I got to school a little bit early, got into class as soon as I could, grabbed the wallet out of my desk, put it on Marianne's desk, and then pretended like I didn't know anything about it. And at that time, I hadn't remembered about the name. So everybody came in, and there were a number of things on people's desks, cards, and, you know, little things. I remember a couple of boys had tried to play jokes on some of the other boys by putting chocolate bars on their desk that they had doctored. And the word doctored, by that I mean they had done something bad to the chocolate bar. I watched when Marianne came in and sat down, and she picked up the package. She looked at it. She looked around, and I purposely wasn't staring at her or anything. And she didn't open it. She put it in her desk. Well, I was waiting and waiting and waiting that for when she would open that. And as far as I could tell, she didn't open it all during that day. At the end of the school day, I saw she took the wallet out and she put it in her school bag, and the day was over. Well, I never had the satisfaction of her knowing who it was that gave her that. And it probably took me a day or two to remember or think of the fact that I had not written my name on that paper, that I had a little note for her. And so, of course, she would know who did that. And she probably wouldn't even have thought that it was me. And it took me a while to get over that, because I couldn't figure out how could I get that information to her, because I really wanted her to know. And anyway, time went on. And I got out of that grade. I got out of elementary school. I don't think I saw Marianne again after the first year we started going to dances at the CYO, because she only went to the dances a few times and then stopped coming. I don't know why, but maybe your parents didn't want her to do that or anything. Anyway, I forgot all about Marianne. I went to high school, I got in the Army, I went to college, I wound up going to graduate school, I wound up getting married, having children. My wife had children, and I was probably 50 years old. My niece, Lydia, who worked at Johns Hopkins in the children's hospital area, she told me, I got a phone call from her. She said, "Uncle Stosh, you won't believe what happened to me today. I had a doctor's appointment, and luckily, one of the doctors that is right on staff at the hospital, I only had to, go downstairs and walk a couple steps and go to the doctor's office. And his secretary was a girl that went to the same elementary school that you did and that I did. Now, Lydia only went to that elementary school until her mother was remarried. Her father had been killed in Korea. And Lydia and her mother lived with us until she was in second grade. And then my sister got married, and Lydia wound up moving and going to a school in a different area. Well, she went on to tell me, she said, there was a girl in your class that we talked about school, and we found out that we both went to that school, and there was a girl graduated the same year as you. And she asked me if I knew you, and I said, of course I knew him. I lived in his house for a number of years until my mother got remarried and went on. Anyway, she told the girl, Marianne, who I was, and Marianne proceeded to tell her that she thought I was the biggest jerk in the class, and that I tried to be nice and talk to her sometimes, and that she would talk to me, but she could never figure out, because she sometimes would catch me looking at her, and she was a little bit freaked out by me paying attention to her. And anyway, Lydia told me about this on the phone, and I said, you know, that's the girl I saved money for. I got her a wallet, I wrapped it, everything, put it in her desk, and she never knew that it was from me. And Lydia and I had a good laugh, because Lydia said, well, it probably is a good idea if she didn't know it was from you, because she didn't think very much of you then. So anyway, it's a good thing that, you know, I think of it as my first venture into romantic land, didn't work the way I wanted it to, because I would have really been upset if she thought I was a real jerk. So, and that's my story for Valentine's Day.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
That is something.
And luckily, being, I guess I was 50 or so, that age, it didn't hurt very much. It would have crushed me when I was 10, 11, 12, something like that. But, you know, because I realized I probably was a jerk when I got in a lot of trouble in elementary school. So,
but not with girls.
Oh, no. No, 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 no. And in fact, I know that some, you know, a lot of the girls thought I was okay. They were more than ones who got to know me, like closer than the neighborhood, I guess. So anyway.
Oh my, what a story.
No romance for Stotch.
Now, well, see, now I want her to meet you now.
Oh, Lydia tried to get me to get in touch with her.
Tell her the story.
No, there was no way I was going to do that. I'm one of those guys that, you know, I don't like having bad memories, and I didn't want to stir up something about, and you know, and I don't know whether I really wanted to talk to her, thinking back, because I also hold grudges. And even though it was about a 35-year or 40-year period, I felt pretty grouchy about the things she said to my niece. So, let's see. We have been on the air just about 40 minutes.
Wow.
I just want to let you know that.
Okay. Yeah. I am now informed.
Okay. Informed. And I thought I might share a different kind of thing. You know, I was looking around, what is there a story we could use on the air for Valentine's Day, and I did find something. But before I do anything like that, I want to ask you, do you have another story?
Nothing that I'm dying to tell.
Okay, so
I thought this was this was kind of neat because I, you know, both of us, we use our devices. We're always looking for stories. And over the last week when we decided, when we talked about this, you know, what's the topic going to be? I was looking around and I found this. Not So Happily Ever After. The Real Endings. And so what I did was looking at, wow, what is this? What is this? And I came across the real story of some of these romantic fairy tales. And I thought I would venture into one of those.
All right.
Okay. And this is, and I'm sure you will know this, but this one is, it has a title of Ashen Puddle. Or Ashen Puddle.
Okay.
That's German. Do you know who that is?
Cinderella.
There you go. See, I knew you would as soon as I found it from you. But anyway, I thought I'm gonna do this. So, this is a well-known story of Cinderella. A fairy godmother transforms a poor, mistreated Cinderella, sends her off to the palace ball, where she finds her prince and falls in love. She leaves her shoe behind on departure. The prince searches the kingdom, eventually tracks down his love, and the pair run off into the sunset. It's a classic love story. In this version by the Brothers Grimm, however, the evil stepsisters get exactly what they deserve. When the prince arrives at the house of Cinderella, because he's got this lost shoe and he travels around the kingdom seeing who it will fit, the wicked stepmother forces both of her daughters in turn to chop off parts of their feet to make them fit inside the shoe. In the bloody attempts to trick the prince into marrying one of her own, it is to no surprise that her plan fails, especially when they are bleeding from their severed feet. The prince rejects them both. Cinderella eventually gets her foot into the slipper, and the pair are to be married. On the day of the wedding, the two stepsisters arrive to get into Cinderella's, you know, good favors, if possible, in the hope that she'll share her fortune. But not so, unfortunately, for the ugly pair. Their eyes are pecked out by pigeons. And thus, for their wickedness and falsehood, they were punished with blindness as long as they lived. How is that for a romantic story for Valentine's Day? I have heard this before, of course, you know, but the first time I heard it, I wasn't very old. I was probably, maybe I was in my 20s or something. And I think I was teaching. And it was the first time I really came across that version and the details. And I can remember being, my stomach being upset and thinking, what insanity to try to slice off pieces of your feet so that you could get them in a shoe. And oh my goodness. Anyway, and I thought, I know. So I bet there are others that are just as wacky. And would you like to hear another one?
Sure.
This is good.
Is this one just as bloody?
This one is maybe even worse. But it's just, if you say The Little Mermaid, a Hans Christian Andersen tale. Oh, and of course, our children who know The Little Mermaid now know it because of Walt Disney and the films that, you know, his, even though he's not around anymore, his company puts out. So this is a sweet story of a mermaid that falls in love with a human prince, and it's a classic fairy tale. In 1837, the story has been adapted the world over. It was written in 1837, sorry. The famous animated love story from Walt Disney. In Hans, Aunt Christian Andersen's version, however, there's not such a happy ending. The Disney film is just, you know, has all kind of nice things in it. The irreversible deal that the Little Mermaid makes with the Sea Witch, where she swaps her voice for legs, was kind of bizarre to begin with. And she it comes with a deal that she has to make the prince fall in love and marry her to gain an immortal soul. If she doesn't succeed, her heart will break and she will turn into foam on the water. That sounds awful. When she goes on land to find her true love, she fails to win the prince's hand in marriage. Little Mermaid has to watch her prince marry someone else, knowing that the day of the wedding arrives will be her last day. Her mer sisters, that's kind of a neat word, mer sisters, mermaid sisters, catch her before the dawn of the wedding day, having made a bargain with the sea witch. The Little Mermaid is allowed to return to the ocean if she kills her beloved prince. They give her an enchanted knife with which she has to kill the prince before sunrise. But if she doesn't, the spell will work and she'll turn into sea foam. She goes slightly insane from a broken heart and generally considers this option before putting it aside, throwing a knife away, and then throws herself overboard. Once more, she looked at the prince with her eyes already dimmed by death, and then dashed overboard and fell, her body dissolving into foam. I like Hans Christian Andersen stories very much. I tell some of them, but there are times when I think, Mr. Andersen, you probably could have used a pint at the local tavern or something, because he really did write some difficult things. And I'm sure, have you heard that? I'm sure you've read the Little Mermaid.
But I don't remember that ending. That's interesting. I have read it.
Yeah, I have a collection of Andersen fairy tales, and every once in a while I pick it up and read through some of the, and there's some of them are really, they're really difficult, you know, I think, whoa. And Andersen was a troubled person. He is regarded, you know, when you say Hans Christian Andersen and people don't really know much about him except that he wrote fairy tales, there's this warm, fuzzy feeling. But if you were to read about his life, you'd find that his life was not warm and fuzzy at all. He had a very difficult life. But he is regarded as a great storyteller. And he had written some of the most beloved fairy tales. And, you know, I know one of my favorite tales that I've told a number of times. I don't know. I may not have told it to you, but Big Claws and Little Claws. Have you ever heard that one?
I remember that one.
It's one of my favorites. I've told it when I was beginning storytelling. I learned it and I liked it so much because it has some really good, funny stuff in it that kids like. When I did some school shows, and that, you know, it has some bad things in it. You know, again, Andersen, thinks nothing of having one neighbor kill another neighbor's horse, stuff like that, you know. And anyway, Big Claws and Little Claws, which is a story I've told. Actually, I think I told it the first 2 years I did a celebration, two different celebrations, and I told it there, and people liked it, and so it was in my bag for a long time, but I haven't told it for a long time, and I don't think you've heard it, so maybe I'll tell that on the radio sometime.
All right. I look forward to that.
Yes. I think we have about 5 minutes left.
Okay.
I'm watching the clock, and we've been on the air for 50 minutes. So
I'm glad you are watching the clock.
Yes. Okay. So
I think we started at 11. We started
a little after 11.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's now 11:56. So
So you're leading up to something.
I thought I might share a poem that I wrote, but I don't know if I've done this before. Have you ever, did I ever share On Soft Breezes with you?
Yes.
You did.
Then but I that doesn't mean you can't.
Okay, well, this is a poem I wrote for my wife.
Yes.
And I wrote a long time ago. This was before we got married. So I am going to share it because this is something special. And okay, so here we go. On Soft Breezes. On soft breezes, your name comes, or perhaps just from my mind. My heart beats more quickly, and I think of what I'll find. When I travel to respond and say, I love you so. How could I help but answer and whisper that I care and say, I'm yours, my love, because you are so fair. Your touch means more than words can tell. You thrill me each time I sense you being here. And my wonder goes on at the sight of you, my delight in knowing that my love is true. Heightens each moment I come to know you are my desire, my partner, my friend, ever more and more as we grow on soft breezes.
That's lovely.
The reason that I like that so much is each time I've looked at it, every once in a while I pick up, look at it, and I think, if I analyze those words, I might find a whole lot wrong with it. and I probably would, but I never want to analyze it. And the reason is, I gave that to Terry and, you know, at the time, you know, Terry was a professional harpist. Besides teaching full time, she had a harp business. She played with an orchestra. She played with a trio. She played 50 to 70 weddings a year. And she immediately took those words and wrote music to it. And she has performed that poem with her music a number of times. And that probably one of the most impressive things that anyone's ever done for me. I was so pleased that she liked the words so much, that she used her talent and her skill, and she wrote music to it, and she has sung it a number of places.
It is a wonderful poem. I've never heard it played or sung, but I would like to.
And we probably won't. She retired.
This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stash Dielkowski.
Closing out the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. We are independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. The Storytelling Hour offers our listeners a window into the world of telling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening today, and stay tuned for...
Or, what's up, John?
You can't hear him. He's nope. Muted.
Bluegrass.
Bluegrass.
Kentucky bluegrass.
Well, more North Carolina than
North Carolina.
Kentucky, but yeah, it's okay. Something along those.